The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Oh, what a great audience. Let's dim the lights for this next one. Nope, too much. Ah, there it is. Gotta get things just right. Like Progressive's Name Your Price tool. Tell us what you want to pay and we help you find coverage options that fit your budget. And now, the mood is right. Wait, the lights are back on again. Trudy, can you? And now it's completely dark.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you pair Bonnie veggies and herbs with Miracle-Gro soil and plant food at the Home Depot, you'll get more than a great edible garden. Right now, you'll also get a great guarantee. If your plants don't produce a harvest by the end of the season, bring them back with your receipt for a full refund. You can't pick better vegetables than that. Grow a garden guaranteed with Bonnie plants and Miracle-Gro soil and plant food. Only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. For full refund details, please visit homedepot.com/return_policy.
4, 3, 2, 1, and you're live.
Welcome to the Church of Mavis Radio Show. It's Friday night. You're listening to United Public Radio, 107.7 FM, New Orleans. A couple of things to plug, and then we'll get to our guest. We got Jay McNicholas here tonight. He has a cold, so he'll sound funny. You can laugh at him. No, he says he's gonna sound like Barry White. So let's hear it, Barry White.
Yeah, I got a sore throat and a nose coming in, and it's I'm not gonna sound mean tonight, that's for sure.
All right, let me plug this stuff and we'll get to Jason Miller, Elements of Spellcrafting. Quality kratom at a fraction of the price, go to TauntonBaySubcompany.com. Life is good, but life is better on Taunton Bay. Or call 207-422-2895, and that's Taunton Bay Soap Company, TauntonBay Soap Company.com. April 13th through the 15th, 2018, the Best Western Inn of the Ozarks Convention Center, Eureka Springs, Ozark UFO Conference, OzarkUFO.com. There'll be a lot of folks talking about aliens there. They have good DVDs, too, so that I don't go to those places because Men in Black can get you, so I'll watch it at home instead. But you can order all their guests in a DVD set, which is pretty cool. But that's OzarkUFOConference.com. Two books real quick. Oh, next week's show is Dudism, Gary Sylvia. You've never seen the movie Big Lebowski, Coen Brothers movie. See it. It's good. I've seen it many times, but they made a whole religion off of it, which is kind of a parody kind of situation, like a Church of Subgenius or something like that, but I'm still trying to understand it and make sure I have enough questions, because it seems like a unique thing to have a lot of questions for sure. So I'm researching. I'm probably going to watch The Big Lebowski again, hopefully. Two books, The Rig by Roger Levy, writer of Great Talent Originality, SF Site, type books. This is the first book by Roger Levy in a decade. The Rig is a science fiction masterpiece of epic skill and ambition. On a desert planet, two boys meet, sparking a friendship that will change human society forever. That's by Titan Books, The Rig. Jonathan Mayberry, Glimpse. Ooh, by Barker Blog. Blurb, I mean. Excuse me. A Waking Dream, at once powerful and suddenly sinister, Claude Barker, about Jonathan Mayberry's Glimpse, and that's St. Martin's Press. St. Martin's Press always has a lot of unique titles, and of course, this type of books, so Jonathan Mayberry Glimpse. Check that out. That comes out, like, this month. It'll be already out. What's the date on it? So it's definitely this month. It's probably already out or about to be out. Let me see, been getting some very unique guests coming up. I try to get one of the weirdest, eclectic lineup of guests ever, and I think I do it. Compared to other radio shows, we get a real situation going here for sure with the guests. We've had Peter Lavendo discussing the Necronomicon by Simon Paperback Books. Let me tell you some guests coming up. Shane Suris, that's True Ghost. That's going to be ghost stuff. Logan Corelli's about some axe murder house. Diana Paxson, that's going to be a complete show on Norse magic and runes. Robert Kopecky, Afterlife, Brian Lacey, Alien Abductee, Colin Campbell, Aleister Crowley, Aravinda, that's some Eastern situation, Ascended Immortal Self. We're going to get into some Eastern situations. We're looking forward to that. He's like a cool guru dude. He wrote a Immortal Self. Isaac Berry, my friend, shaman. Ooh, can't wait for that. That's coming up. We have a lot of shamans on, like real deal from tribes, like situations. This summer. Let me see who. Oh, this is a good one. Victor Foya, my Romanian buddy. Remember the guy that did the Halloween show and he has an eye patch, an eye situation. But he's coming on about Vlad the Impaler this summer again. So he just had another book come out. So, and there ain't nothing like sitting down with him talking about Vlad the Impaler. I'm ready to do it again. The first time was a ride. Let's do it again. But that's summer. So we got a lot of cool stuff coming up. You'll be here for that one, Jay. So.
Okay, cool. Did you see the I put on the .com Facebook or the CLM Facebook with the you could win a weekend for two sleeping in coffin shaped beds at Vlad's castle in Romania.
Yeah, I saw something like that. I believe someone put it in the group. You did or somebody did.
I did it. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. I've never been on a plane, but maybe.
Yeah, that would be fun.
If I won, which I doubt I would, but sounds fun nonetheless. But that'll be fun. Glad the Impaler show. Get some unique shows. We got Leonard Scranton coming on about the New Zealand Aboriginal Warriors this summer, so that's going to be good. Let's get to our guest. Tonight's guest, Jason Miller. His book is The Elements of Spellcrafting, 21 Keys to Successful Sorcery by New Page Books. Great to have you here, Jason. How are you doing? Good to have you here.
Good, Jeffrey. How are you?
I'm alive. I'm in Florida. Putin hasn't nuked us yet, but he did show it on an instructional video getting blasted, but I'm still here. You panic attack. but yeah, great to have you here. For sure. I'm alive as can be in the strange new world we live in here in America. But great to have you here and very excited. If you could give our listeners some background about yourself.
Sure. Yeah. I'm a practical magician, a sorcerer. And I've been practicing since I was 15 years old and I'm 45 now. So that's a heck of a long time. I have traveled to 21 different countries. I have been teaching professionally for the last 10 years or so. And, make my living as a teacher and consultant on matters occult and sorceress.
So how do most people react when you tell them you're a sorcerer? Like, for instance, down here, I tell people I'm a paranormal radio host, and some of them will just stop talking to you, like, on personal to put you on block. I'm just kind of curious, how do people react to that? I think it's great. I love it. How do people normally, you get all kinds of reactions?
Well, you get all kinds, and I have to admit that when I am out in mixed company, I will introduce myself as a writer. You know, if I'm bringing my kids to the playground and I'm meeting other parents and we get to talk, and I introduce myself as a writer. And then if they ask, well, what do you write about? I'll say, well, I write about meditation and strange religion and mysticism. And I avoid magic as a word, and I avoid sorcery and occultism as a word, as these are sort of the terms that set people aflutter. It's a weird thing that in America today, at least here in the Northeast and on the West Coast, You can be going to the most harmless healing ceremony in the world, but if you say, you know, I'm going to a witchcraft coven or something to do this, people will freak out. But you could be going to some kind of really hardcore ritual where there's a dagger stabbing a voodoo doll called the Linga. But if it's Buddhism, aka the Tibetan Purba ritual, then everybody just like, oh, it's Buddhism. It's wonderful. Isn't that great? You know? So it's all just semantics, really. So until people get to know me, I usually do I wuss out.
Definitely, and it's definitely fascinating. I've enjoyed your book, and I know a long time ago I interviewed you on Examiner. That was a long time ago. I know I have it somewhere, but I did. The Examiner is gone now. They like went out of business or something, but I still have all those files and everything from when I've written interview people on there many moons ago. But I got a kind of a personal question about spirits from someone and how you might deal with it. Let me see if this. I think my camera went off. Or am I still on there? Yeah, I'm still on there. Okay. And for instance, someone I know had a husband pass away, and they told me they went to the graveyard to see him, and it seems like on some type of situation that he's still there and like maybe sabotaging her life or trying not to let her see people or just weird, like there's some weirdness. What are some ways that you think you could get rid of something like that, like protection wise, or how would you deal with a situation like that? Let's say someone has a ghost situation with a husband and they want to get rid of it and, you know, detach from it. I mean, what are some things that you would do just hearing it from your perception?
Oh, well, you know, it depends on whether the spirit is foreign and whether it's causing you a lot of problems. So, for instance, if it's a family member or former husband or something like that, you don't want to go in guns blazing and exorcism and the whole nine yards, right? You're not trying to defeat, destroy, capture, and otherwise abuse the heck out of this thing. So what you want to do are simple methods of elevating. Some people will consecrate a candle to that spirit, and then they'll elevate it a little bit every day. So it starts on the floor, and then they pray for that spirit's elevated. This is sort of like strict Kardashian spiritism. And then you raise it up to a tabletop, and then raise it up to a bookshelf, and then further and further until it gets upward. And then hopefully this, you experience less and less attachment with this, and you're all the while praying for the spirit to pass on and to move on to its proper place. There are other ways to propitiate spirits, making offerings. If there are spirits of the land that are causing problems, you can sometimes consecrate an area of your yard to those spirits and just say, you know, you do your thing here. It could be like a 1-foot by 1-foot square. And then you just leave that alone. That's for them. But if it's something where there's real harm being caused, real danger being caused, etc., then you want to start cleansing out. You want to start protecting and banishing. So you would start off by spraying Florida water, for instance, or using some kind of, I like Epsom salt fire, a little bowl. Metal bowl in the middle of a room with Epsom salt and alcohol, light it on fire, it just sucks all of that up. And then you dump it outside. But you cleanse the house room by room, headed towards the door, moving that stuff outside. Some people like the sage and the smudging. I'm not much into that myself, but it's quite popular.
So what is it, Jason? Just Epsom salt, and what do you do exactly with
Epsom
it?
Epsom salt. You know, you put Epsom salt in a fire safe bowl, and you cover it with alcohol. So much so that when you take a match to it, it lights on fire. Epsom salt is magnesium sulfate, so it's flammable as long as you have something there, and it's also cleansing. It's probably one of the fastest and easiest and quickest ways to quote spiritually cleanse a room.
Okay.
So
sure. Okay, I was just writing that down real quick, but yeah. I'll definitely try that for myself and let them know about that as well. I've never heard of that, but I'll try it. Sounds interesting for sure. So I'll definitely try that out.
Yeah, it's a good method. And then after the spirit is gone, then you want to set up protections, wards, talismans, things like that to keep the place under lock and key.
And do you think some of these spirits, when they die, that do they have a choice to go into the light and they don't and stay behind, and that's where maybe they can take on negativity more? Or is it like, what do you think it's like? Is that a situation that happens, you think?
Well, I tend to think it's a little more complicated than that. So, first of all, most cultures don't have this idea of a single soul and body. So I tend to think of that when we die, there are a bunch of aggregate parts that go into different places. So we have a part of the soul, the body, of course, returns to the ground, but there's a part of the soul that incarnates into a future incarnation, unless something goes really wrong. But that doesn't mean that there's not still a shade left behind, a memory of this ego that can stay behind. If it's particularly attached to this life or has unfinished business, then it can exist as a restless spirit. The Greeks believed in the aorai, the spirits of people that met their ends through violent means, and that spirit would kind of hang around and be restless until its appointed time when it would have otherwise died. So there's a number of things that can happen. So, yeah, I mean, a light and then it doesn't move into, that would sort of represent that attachment. But that's not the only scenario, nor is that representative of the entirety of that being.
Well, I appreciate it, definitely. And there's my situation with me, I'm kind of interested what you would think about it. From I'd like to hear your alien brain, so to speak, after hearing my personal story and see what you think about it. Because right now I'm writing a book myself. I have books I wrote before, but it's been a while, so I'm trying to do another one. I've had some discipline troubles, but the last week I'm finally doing it, and it feels so much better. It's like a cleansing, or like you were clogged and suddenly you unclogged yourself. I was dealing with some resistance and discipline problems and stuff. But my book I'm trying to do is about light beings. Just real quick, my story: when I was 17, I had testicular cancer and went through chemo and almost died. And during that, I said a prayer, like I was in the comic books and Anne Rice and stuff, and I was, you know, dying, so I said a prayer to be a superhero, and I was healed. I'm fine now. My dad died like a year later, and then I started to read everything I could get my hands on, and then eventually I had a lot of paranormal experiences and started to attract a lot of different experiences to me since he died from my early 20s, and some of these experiences follow me to every house I go to. I've had weird UFO stuff happen. I don't know if I've ever been taken by freaking aliens or not. If I have, I don't remember a damn thing. But I've had a lot of sightings of weird stuff with multiple witnesses to every house I moved to. I've had friends look at me and go, Jeffrey, you're attracting them here. So every house I go to, phenomenon follows me. But one of the big ones, that's why I do the show, if it was not for seeing crazy stuff in my own eyes, I would be doing something totally different with my life. That's why I do the show, because I've just been trying to figure out, you know, why, and get different guests on talking about different subjects. But one of the big things that has been happening since my early 20s and still happens right now, a lot of it's calmed down, is I see energy beams of light with my own eyes. And I've seen two leave this house, and something, I went outside and turned towards my house and looked. And I saw, it was like there were two people of light leaving my house. Like one flew, it was like they were inside, but they left my house through the roof. And it was like they had been inside, but they left. And it was one after the other, like two people standing on top of each other, and they flew into the heavens. And I've seen them multiple times. And I wrote an article about it, and it was strange because Brett Butler, the actress comedian, wrote me thanking me for that article from Grace Under Fire, which was, celebrities don't write me out of the blue like that, so it was kind of weird in a cool way, but she thanked me for the article about the light beams and then showed me pictures that she collects of weird light beam phenomenon, which was kind of weird with Brett Butler to have that experience, because it was just out of the blue that just happened within the last week. But one of the things I'm trying to figure out is, a lot of people I haven't heard have told me they've never heard of anybody seeing beings like that with your own eyes, like in the physical. And I talked to shamans, and there was one guy from Peru that said down there they meet during times of the day and watch the shining ones in the sky. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty interesting. But I'm just kind of curious, from your perception, what have you come across any stories of beings of light and what you would think they are? And why do you think some of us, well, I think part of my reason I may be seeing into these other realms abnormally is I think chemo like nuked me like an X-Men or something when I was 17. That's what possible. I mean, I don't have all the answers, but I'm just kind of curious what you think about all that.
Yeah, well, you know, beings of light and exist in almost every culture that I can think of. I've seen them, beings of light and of darkness. You know, I had an experience that I talk about a lot when I was 5, looking up and kind of seeing through the veil of reality. And after that, I was, you know, I received visitations, moments of frozen time and the presence of spirits. Now, I mostly perceive those as sort of shadowy, but in other practices, I've experienced beings of light. When discussing, for instance, what happens to Tibetans that practice Turgyel, which is rainbow body yoga. The body dissolves into 5 colored light, leaving only hair and fingernails behind. So it is actually, you know, and this is something that it's something that happens. We have photographs of the bodies that shrink when they're interrupted midway through the process. And it's something that is taken seriously enough, even outside of that religion, that the Vatican has sent people to study the phenomena. So the idea that there are beings of light out there is, you know, there are non-local ways of existing that overlap into our ordinary reality. And so I think you're spot on. I think you might very well be seeing things because of the chemo, because something shifted in the way that you process things, and So you see these beings, and it may be that they're meaningful at times, but it may also just be a window into that different reality. And just like if someone else had sort of a random window into our reality, it might not mean anything specifically for them. It might just be weird crap that happens.
Definitely. What was the name of that religion? Because I know Jay posted some article in the group not too long ago about some Buddhists doing light body weird stuff. It sounds similar to what you said, but what's the religion called so I can type it in my notes?
It's in Tibetan Buddhism, and the practice is called Togyal, T-O-G-A-L, and it's a Dzogchen practice that, you know, is cultivated to contemplate light and darkness. And then at the end of your life, you're able to do this retreat where you dissolve the body.
That's weird, man, but I like it. When you were talking about peering into the, you know, the other realms, I can go out when I, like, sometimes I can look off my back porch into the heavens, or after I wake up off my porch and look into that, it's like I see behind, it's like there's a quantum realm around the earth filled with those beings. And part of me thinks they're just us without our bodies, but I mean, I've heard different things from extraterrestrials to angels to, I mean, I've heard all kinds of different things, but I think maybe us without our bodies, that's what I really think it is. I mean, there could be different levels of them, like, you know, spiritual masters, or maybe that's just the way I perceive them too, and they're just energy, and I don't know, but that's definitely, I kind of liken it to if you peel back the heavens and looking into like a honeybee nest or an ant pile and all the, you know, tunnels and hives. It's kind of like Earth is a catacomb and we're like these energy beings. And I jokingly bring up Cocoon 1 and 2 all the time, you know, Ron Howard, those movies with the old people and the cocoons. That's like Ron Howard knows. He knew.
Right.
With the light beams and all that stuff. But yeah, I appreciate your view on it, definitely. That's why I like to, I've asked different people about it, and I always learn more. It's like a different, you know, piece of the puzzle. And we've had all kinds of people on here from, you know, Joe R. Lansdale, who, he wrote that Bubba Hotep movie, you know, Weird West, and then I've had Neil Donald Walsh conversations with God and asked him about it, and I'm really grateful that you answered that. So it's kind of like I'm collecting it and finding more out about it by, you know, asking people that are in the know.
Right on. And I'm sure you get a slightly different answer from everybody you ask.
Yeah, it's always definitely different on some level, for sure. Well, let's let Jay ask a few questions, like try to balance it out a little bit. Go ahead, Jay.
Okay, hey, yeah, I tend to ask more technical questions. So I've asked the same question of other magicians. They all seem to answer the same way, so I'm curious to see if you follow their line of thinking. When you cast a spell, is there evil magic? Is there good magic? Is there evil wizards or bad wizard? Or is there a different explanation?
So the answer that you've probably gotten, and one that I agree with, is that magic is magic, and that there's not evil magic and good magic, just like there's not evil electricity and good electricity. You know, we can use electricity to execute someone, and we can use electricity to, you know, power our Skype chat here. But it's not good electricity that goes into the Skype chat and evil electricity that electrocutes someone. So there's no black and white magic in the sense that the type of it is evil. But there are some considerations about what we do with magic that make it functionally the same thing. So for instance, if we are constantly using magic for cursing, if we're constantly using magic to cause ill to people. It patterns the way we think about things, just like everything else we do. It patterns the way we think about things, how we approach things. And so, and it also gathers that kind of power around us. It exposes us to those kinds of people. So I'm sure that you know people in your life, they're not necessarily magicians, but they are maybe particularly craven. They're always up for a fight. If it can be solved peacefully or through getting somebody, they will choose to throw down every time. And we see this with magicians. I was people who want magic done. I was recently talking to someone, and they were asking about how to get a promotion. And just as I was about to, you know, lay out or advise them to read one of my books that has glyphs in there for getting promotions, they were like, you know, how do I eliminate the other people that want this job? And it just goes to show that the more you do that kind of thing, the more it patterns your thought. And then the more that you contact spirits that are good at that kind of thing, the more you're surrounded by that. Just like if you loved getting into bar fights and you loved, doing illegal activities or something like that, you're going to be surrounded by the people you do that with. And sooner, you know, you can't run around with the mafia and not sooner or later find yourself in an uncomfortable situation. So it's not so much that the magic is evil. There's no evil magic, and there's no evil magicians other than people who like to do evil things. But functionally, doing magic that with a mind towards causing ill will still surround you with that kind of vibe, just like if you're that kind of person.
Yeah, it sounds exactly like I think you explained a little differently than other guests that I've asked this question of. But it sounds again like it comes down to perception. One magician we asked the question of, he described it like weather. He said you have two farmers. Farmer one has a healthy crop. Farmer two has a dying crop. And then a huge thunderstorm rolls over. The thunderstorm in and of itself, being the magic, is neutral. It's not good or bad, but the extra rain kills the first farmer's crop who was healthy, and then the second farmer's crop who was dying, it brings it back to life. So the first farmer thinks the storm was evil because it killed his food, and then the second farmer who had the dying crop thinks the storm or the magic is good because it brought his crops back. So it's based on perception rather than on the cast or.
Yeah, it can be, yeah.
And I was looking in your book, there's a couple of great chapters. I wrote some notes down. Your book is subtitled 21 Keys to Successful Sorcery. So I was looking at some of the keys, and key 18 kind of grabbed my eye. And there's like a little cartoon there that says, bind her to me, keep her from leaving. It sounds to me like, and I've asked this question also of other guests, that there are consequences to certain spells, and, you know, what can they be? Are the consequences, do they fall back on the person who wants the spell cast, or do they fall back on the caster of the spell?
Well, you know, it's cause and effect, so it really depends. I would love to believe that bad things always happen to bad people, but I know too many bad people who lead relatively hassle-free lives.
Yeah.
our worlds are ruled by them for the most part. And so I can't view life that way. So the comic you're describing, and each of the keys begins with a little comic, has Harold the Sorcerer asking the demon, you know, bind her to me, keep her from leaving. And the demon says, so we're going from influence to kidnapping now, you know, let it go, man.
Yeah.
the idea being that there is a time to just, you know, let this go. It's it, what you're putting in to make this thing happen is not going to make it happen. As to quote Mean Girls, stop trying to make that happen. It's not going to happen. And so there are repercussions, but it's cause and effect. It's not that things blow up on you if you do them wrong, and it's not that if you do something bad, the magic police notice and make something equally or three times bad happen to you. I know a lot of people put stock in that. I do not.
Okay, that's a good answer. Now, Key 16, kind of, I didn't quite understand. Enchant for what you don't deserve. That's very interesting. Explain that some for us.
Okay, so we all have, a lot of us are locked into this idea that we deserve something and not other things. That we're getting in life what we're allotted, and we have this sense of what we're comfortable with, right? So even if you want to be making $5 million a year or $1 billion or whatever it is, that's in reality that's way out of your comfort zone, and it challenges your perceptions of how you were raised, the community that you're from, the people you know. And what I see often is people have this concept that somehow if they ask for something better, that the gods, the spirits, whatever it is, are going to somehow take it out on them because they don't deserve it. Right? They are undeserving. So the point of enchant for what you don't deserve is to kind of blaspheme against the idea that you do or do not deserve anything. There is no force in the world that is looking at you saying, okay, I want you to be making no more than $40,000 a year. And whereas somebody else, the universe is looking at them and saying, well, you can make $500,000 a year. No, it has more to do with the fact that this one guy grew up in a community where everybody was a doctor, lawyer, or banker, and this other person grew up in a community where everybody was middle management, and that's just how stuff shook out. So it's a way to shake people out of thinking in terms of being small, in terms of just fixing little things that are wrong with their life. Go for something larger. Go enchant for something that you think you don't deserve.
So it sounds like they're trying to be unselfish and maybe sort of even reverse psychology, like, you know, maybe casting a spell that I don't deserve to be happy, and then it will reverse and become a positive thing and make you happy. Is that what you're saying?
No. It's not. So you would not phrase the spell to say, you know, I don't deserve something. You would look for the things in life that somewhere deep down you feel you don't deserve. So if you feel you don't deserve to be happy, if you feel you don't deserve to, you know, have a beautiful house and a beautiful wife, as the Talking Heads song goes.
Yeah.
This is a challenge to people, and this is a part later in the book where it's about advancing your craft. It's to think bigger. It is to go bigger. It is to blow that idea out of the water that there is anything allotted to you or not allotted to you. You get what you go for. Sometimes you don't get it, but if you don't go for it, you definitely won't get it. So it is a challenge, a throwdown to people to let go of the smallness of their thinking.
Okay.
You know, and it has nothing to do with selfishness. It's not an endorsement of, you know, selfishness is I want this and I don't care about anybody else. Right? Or I want what you have. That's not it. This is about going for the big stuff because it's not hurting anyone else. If you were to double your salary tomorrow, you're not taking food out of anyone else's mouth. You know? This is, it's just you suddenly having a huge boost. Yet, people get really hung up on this idea of whether they're worthy of that or whether it's okay for them to have that or they have some kind of, you know, in their mind they would like to make a lot of money, but they have this idea that it's somehow noble to be poor because that's what everybody told themselves. Throw that out the window. I mean, if you're practicing magic, you're doing something radically different than the world around you even acknowledges. So don't think small.
Okay. All right. Very good. Now, this might kind of tie into the last question. Excuse me. Key 10 was use macro and micro enchantments. I've never heard that phrase before, and they kind of confused me. What exactly does that mean, micro and macro?
Right.
I know so, first means how far does it apply to an enchantment?
So right. So in the chapter, I talk about this concept of macro and micro enchanting as a strategy for sorcery, and my business is strategic sorcery. My main course that people take is called strategic sorcery. And so I am very interested in people using magic in ways that will enable them to do bigger things, better things. And it's not so much that I want to give them different spells or different rituals. It's that I want them to use the spells and rituals they have in ways that are better, you know? Like, I'm not looking to change my diet. I'm just looking to eat those same things in different amounts and more mindfully so that I'm healthier. It's the same thing. So the macro-micro thing basically works like this. Let's say, let's do a live example. What's something in your life that you would like to change? Something you'd like to go after?
Well, currently I have been for the last year or so trying to get moved up as a supervisor at my job.
Perfect. Perfect. So you want to be moved up as a supervisor at your job. So the first thing that you would do is based on your background, your training, your experience, your allies or whatever, you would do what is called a macro enchantment, right? So this is all the magic most people do. If you're Catholic, maybe you are appealing to Mary of the Miraculous Medal or Saint Homabonus, who is sometimes related to wealth. If you're a Buddhist, maybe you're praying to Jambala, who increases things. If you're a pagan, maybe it's Jupiter that you want to appeal to. So it doesn't really matter what background you come from. The macro enchantment just says, this is a ritual to achieve this thing. So that sets the overall arc. This is me. This is what I want. I want to be a supervisor at my company. Now, what are the things that you need to do to become a supervisor? So the first thing, you always want to start with yourself. So now you can do some magic on yourself, perhaps to find, to be more disciplined. So you might use some influence from Saturn or Mars to be more disciplined, and also the sun. An invocation of the sun so that you get noticed more. There are a hell of a lot of people at jobs that do incredible work but never get noticed. And there are people who just walk around getting noticed even though they do meh work, you know? So you have to have this combination of competence and being and visibility. So you do magic to cultivate that. Then you figure out who the hiring managers are. Who are the people that make this decision? Well, you get some links from those people, their business cards, you know, hair from their brushes or something like that, you know, so a tissue they blew their nose in or something. And then you bring that home, and now you're doing a spell to enchant them. This can go a number of different ways. You can be very sweetening towards them. So you might use some spells that involve honey and sugar. Honey jars are very popular right now, but it's not the only way. There are ways that you could be more coercive to bind them, like, you will hire me into this position. Depending upon, again, your training, your disposition, what you're good at, where your talents lie. But all of these things are micro enchantments. So in other words, you have the macro enchantment, and then you identify the things that will get you from A to B, and you enchant each of those things. That's micro enchantment.
Okay, that makes absolute sense now. You know, go for the big parts and then fill in with the little things to get everything filled in. Makes absolute sense. Now, this one intrigued me also, that you had key number 7. Emergency magic is bad magic. I've never heard anyone refer to magic as being in, you know, an emergency type of need. And I suppose, yeah, I guess if you had emergency, you could use magic to resolve it. Where are you going with that? Is emergency magic becomes bad?
Okay, so there are two reasons, really, why emergency magic is bad magic. The first reason is that you probably should have been using magic earlier on. So the first reason I ever said this, and I said this a long time ago, years ago, and it caught on, because many people, when they're studying magic or witchcraft, are told magic is for emergencies. People get told which you only use a spell when everything else has failed. People used to get told this all the time. And just to be blunt, it's dumb. It's dumb advice. It's, you know, in what other area of life would this be appropriate? You know, like, it would be like me showing you a few basic martial arts moves and then telling you only train in these when you're being attacked. Like, don't use them ahead of time. Don't train them. Don't get good. Don't train your body. Don't spar. Just only use them when you absolutely need to. It doesn't make any sense. So magic can be used for proactive things to prevent emergencies. If your business is failing and you're just like, well, you know, we've got enough cash to last for another month, it's time to break out the magic to fix this situation, it's too late, man. Magic is not going to fix that. You're done. You know, at best, magic is going to help you manage your disaster. So that's really the main reason why emergency magic is something that I consider, you know, that I consider bad magic. That's where that key came from. The other thing about emergency magic is one of the big dangers of magic has nothing to do with demons. It has nothing to do with spells blowing up on you or anything like that. It is the ability to use magic to maintain the status quo. Magic works really good sometimes to keep us from losing our sense of comfort, right? So you know, think about it this way. It you might want to make $20,000 more. You might really want to be a supervisor at your job, and you feel that urge. But the urge to become a supervisor at your job, if you're like most people, is nowhere near the amount of panic and mental response that you would have at the threat of losing the position you currently hold, right? That would be like a disaster.
Yeah.
And so magic to prevent that tends to work a little bit better for people. It's also maintaining a status quo. So it's usually not some kind of Herculean task that magic can't manage. The problem is that it keeps people locked into jobs they hate, living situations they hate, relationships that aren't going anywhere, businesses that are going to fail eventually. And what happens? Your business drives you deeper in debt. Your relationship, you just spend another 5 to 10 years with this person, making you older, more bitter, less desirable, and able to find someone else. And you know, you stay trapped in a job that you hate until you start to get age discrimination and it becomes harder to find a new job. Better sometimes to let these things go. So sometimes when your people are having this emergency, I usually tell them, well, look at your situation. Maybe this is something that should happen. So that's why emergency magic is bad magic. We all have magic emergencies that happen sometimes, and magic can be used to fix them. But we should acknowledge that if we're having this emergency, then we've already, you know, not thought of something, or you know, we're having to resort to something. It's not what you want your practice to consist of. And so many people out there, their magical practice seems to consist of nothing other than fixing, you know, problems with magical duct tape.
As we all know, duct tape doesn't do what it's supposed to do anyway, so that's good advice. Now, I'd like to get back into some more mechanics of spellcasting. And then you mentioned some entities on how to find prosperity and other things. I'd like to find. I have a question on that later. But Jeff likes to make fun of me about this. My real only experience with magic is I've never done an actual real spell. But I played D&D from the 70s through college and all. And it seems to me Gary Gygax really did his research into magic for the magic user class in the game. It seems that all spells, even real enchantments that magicians nowadays use, they have three components: verbal, somatic, and material. The somatic being a hand gesture, the material being some actual physical object you need for the spell, and then, of course, verbal would be an enchantment or a song or something you have to incant as you invoke the spell. Can you go into that a little bit for us? What kind of materials do you need for your spells? What kind of somatic gestures do you use, and what kind of verbal incantations are used?
Oh, goodness. I mean, it runs the gambit. And you know, those are not the only things that are required. There are states of concentration that are required. There's participation of spirits and offerings that are required. There are some spells that can be done very short, but they're done on the basis of regular practice and longstanding relationships. So, for instance, you know, if I make regular offerings to a group of spirits without asking for anything, and then one day I'm out in the middle of, you know, traveling and I need something, I can call upon those spirits, and based on the relationship I have, you know, they'll act quickly with minimum fuss, minimum ceremony, because they're, you know, it's somebody you know, just like friends of yours that you have long-standing relationships with. So it differs, honestly, from me. It differs. I'm highly influenced by Roman and Greco-Roman paganism. I'm highly influenced by Catholic and Christian magic and mysticism. I'm highly influenced by Buddhist magic. And so each one of those involves offerings, can involve statuary, can involve mudras, which are hand gestures. And I incorporate all of these into my magical style. But you'll notice one thing about the book. It's actually one of the first review, the only 2-star review that it got, the one negative review it has on Amazon, is actually a complaint that there are no spells in the book. And that is absolutely correct. There are no, by design, it is not a recipe book. It's a tactical manual. So it's sort of like, I don't want to change the spells you're doing or the rituals you're doing. I want to show you how to aim them at stuff so that they matter in your life, as opposed to just creating funky weirdness, or occasional like, woohoo, you know, I found 50 bucks in the street, like, you know, yippee. But was that really worth your time and effort summoning a goetic demon for? So these, you know, the spells and the rituals, the verbal, somatic, and material components, there's a lot more to it than just those three components. And then some spells, you might not have any somatic component as far as hand gestures or anything like that. It all differs, tradition, and then time and which ritual. So it's, I mean, when we're talking about magic, we're talking about something as old as humanity itself and something that exists in literally every religion and every culture on earth.
Yeah. And you mentioned some other things about magic that I was also going to bring up. Now there are different types of spell that can be cast. There's a conjuration spell where you can conjure up a physical or material item. Then going back into my D&D experience, there's a summoning spell where you can summon a demon or an entity into your realm. There are augury spells where you can divine, you know, get information about a certain area or a subject, and so on and so forth. But you also mentioned, you know, that there are different levels of concentration. And Gary Gygax, being diligent in his research, I think, and I have a question about that as well. It seemed also that there are certain kinds of spells that are fire and forget. Like there's a spell called Magic Missile where you point your finger and little bolts of energy come from your finger and cause damage to an enemy. And it's just a fire and forget. You don't have to concentrate on it once it's cast. It's like instantaneous. And other things you have to continue concentrating on to keep that spell going, like an illusion spell. Of like, you know, if you want to scare away a bunch of robbers, you can make an illusion of a dragon, but you have to concentrate constantly on that spell, and if anything breaks your concentration, someone hits you or bumps into you, the spell goes away. So is that also true of the real-world magic?
Well, I don't know anyone that can create illusions of dragons at will.
Right, but that kind of thing. I know that I've had magicians say that there are certain spells that they have to maintain a certain level of concentration on, not only while they're casting it, but also for a time afterwards for it to take effect. And if something were to break their concentration, so I imagine something would make the spell fail.
Right. If the spell that you're doing is one that relies upon deep concentration or a meditative state, then breaking from that will fail. If the spell you're doing requires chanting of a mantra a certain amount of times and you stop for some reason, then it'll fail. If you're spell requires offerings to be made to a certain spirit at a certain time and you don't do it, then it could fail, or you could even incur the wrath of that spirit for not keeping your promise. So yeah, sure.
Well, we were supposed to do a break, but Joe said no break. So if anybody needs to go, just let me know. And like, if you need to go, guess me and Jake can talk for a minute or something. We usually have a break, but I don't know what's going on. Studio's in New Orleans, so I'm in Florida. There's nothing I can do about it.
No worries. I love New Orleans, so.
Yeah, that's where Joe's at. He's in New Orleans. I'm in Florida, but I'm originally from Georgia. I'm kind of curious about where do you get your glyphs from? Because I know, like, there's the Seals of Solomon, and I know there's, like, the ones that are in the Necronomicon, Simon. What is the one from on your book, and what would you recommend us to a source for us to go to if we want to do that with spell working? I would kind of consider myself kind of a novice that I've read a lot of stuff. I do a lot of shamanism type stuff, creative visualization, but mostly I'm just a big reader. But I mean, there's some more I would like to do, and I'm just kind of curious, what would be your go-to for a source for symbols and stuff? For glyphs?
Well, you know, this glyph is one that is the result. It's of a group, from a group of glyphs that were created back, I guess, 5 years ago now, 6 years ago now, with me and my illustrator Matthew Brownlee, also, you know, probably my oldest friend, and we summoned the spirit of Jupiter, and he delivered this group of sigils that are in my book, my third book, Financial Sorcery. But we held several of them back that were, for lack of a better word, we'll call them metaglyphs, glyphs that were made to affect other types of magic. And so this glyph is used to boost the success of any magic that it comes in contact with. This, the glyph on the book, and I have a little page in the back describing it. As for sources of glyphs and visualizations, you know, take a look at the writings of Austin Osman Spare and chaos magicians that have talked about creating sigils. And these are methods that where essentially you come out with a word or a statement of intent, and then you break it up to create a sigil out of it, out of the letters. And then, of course, you have spirit sigils, such as you'd find in the Key of Solomon, the Ars Goetia from the Key of Solomon, and the Grimoire Verum. All the classical grimoires, you have the Veves of Haitian voodoo, Pontos of Umbanda from Brazil. You have the rune staves of, they're not really rune staves, but the magical staves of Iceland, of Icelandic books of magic. People often confuse these with Viking magic, but all of these are, you know, from relatively recent history, long after the countries are Christianized. So, and, you know, Bjork has a famous one of these, the Helm of Awe tattooed on her. And then you have Sungwa in Tibetans. I have a Sungwa tattooed on my arm for protection from evil spirits. So, yeah, the world is just full of little squiggly lines that have magical meaning.
Definitely. I don't know. I keep saying in the chat room, we keep hearing noise that sounds like a helicopter flying by, but I don't know what it is. I told Joe.
I was holding my mala, and it might have been making a noise, so I will put it down, and hopefully that will
no
stop.
Big deal. I kept hearing those, like, what is it? Sounds like a helicopter. It wasn't that bad, so it's no big deal. But so what do you think about that? We've had Peter Levine on. I know he beats around the bush about that Simon Necronomicon, but everybody thinks it's him, which it probably is. But I don't know for sure. But what do you think about that book? That book freaks me out. I used to mess with it a lot when I was younger and a lot more dumber and experimenting with drugs and doing stupid stuff with it. But now I'm scared to even mess with it. But I own it. But it's like I haven't opened them. Like I bought new copies and I just don't. I was like I'm scared of them.
Well, if you look at the acknowledgments of Simon's book Dead Names, which is him telling the story behind the Necronomicon, you'll see I get a thank you in there. So I know who Simon is, and I'm not telling. I'm sworn to secrecy, but I like it. The book, I do not necessarily buy the story of its origin. I would say I actively disbelieve that it was part of a cache of stolen books. That said, it's well constructed. It's based on fairly solid source material and in the Epic of Gilgamesh, influenced by Gnostic scripts like the Book of Jew, and it has a power of its own. So I have used the Necronomicon to good effects. I have like two or three hardbound copies. I have one of the second edition copies from the 70s, and I have the new hardback. And I got the Necronomicon when I was a teenager, like everybody else. And I also got the Necronomicon spellbook from Magical Child in New York City. And I used the Necronomicon spellbook, and it worked enough times before I could really find out about, the Necronomicon story is likely BS. And so while I don't believe the story behind it, I do believe that it's functional magic. It's not the greatest magic in the world. It's not the most powerful or dreaded, but it is a functioning system for people that want to use it.
This is definitely interesting, no doubt about it. I know one thing I had Peter Levinda, I asked him about me using the word, Mavis, Mavis from Nostradamus, and the story behind that is, in my early 20s, well, my dad died when I was in my early 20s, 1920. And he always told us if we ever did drugs on any level, he would shoot us, and I believed it. And when he died, I experimented, of course. And, I went through my party mode, and it was the first time I was going to concerts and all that good stuff. And that's when I came across that Simon Necronomicon book, but I also was going to make a metal band, and I came across that name from, Mavis from Nostradamus. I'm like, oh, make a metal band, call it Mavis. I never got around to it. I started having weird experiences, so instead it morphed into this, and I was just talking to him about it, and he said that it's a thought form that drains me, and it's a weird word. Like, everybody thinks it means Antichrist, and maybe it does, but Nostradamus never really says that. The other thing is, someone told me that John Hoag was the originator of that lately, which I don't know how true that is, but someone said that he was the one that initially said that about that. So it's kind of a weird word that I probably shouldn't have messed around with, but I did. Now I'm like a fool, and now it's too late, and here I am. I don't have, terrible bad luck or anything, but sometimes I do. But I'm just kind of curious from an energetic standpoint of messing around with that word and glyphs and symbols. if it is causing any kind of, you know, negativity of any kind in my life, what are some things that I could do with symbols or things I could do to make it, you know, maybe change that energy?
So, you know, there's the first thing that you, that I would suggest doing to change energy, without, well, it depends on if you wanted to do something short term or if you wanted to engage in a practice. There's different advice. If we're talking about, you know, give me something quick to do that might break up my cross conditions, then I would tell people to take a bath. Not a regular bath, but a spiritual bath where you're using herbs to essentially brew bath water like you would a tea, but you do it in a basin. And you might want to use three salt baths, so Epsom salt, saltpeter, and sea salt or alum. Or you could use pine needles. They're excellent for cleansing. You could use eucalyptus to reverse negativity. I wrote a book about this called Protection and Reversal Magic. So a bath is very effective at this. And you would do this for maybe 9 nights where you bathe in this and you wash yourself from the head down to the feet. And then either let that water run down the drain or you gather it in the basin and you dump it outside towards the rising sun in the morning. But if you were really wanting to change things around and it wasn't a matter of give me a spell or something to help fix me for a little bit, but I want to take up a practice, then I would say, A, start meditating, not necessarily going on retreat, because that can actually cause some anxiety for people and dissociative problems when they jump right into a meditation retreat. But start taking up the practice of meditation, cleanse the mind, start taking up an energetic practice like yoga or inner heat practice, in order to gain control of the body's energies, start making offerings to the local spirits, to the, as well as protectors and angels or and whatever it is that your spiritual system acknowledges, start making offerings so that you have this positive flow going back and forth between you. And, you know, start doing devotions and energetic practices to protect yourself.
Hey Jeff, I have a follow-up to this question. I like that advice of the bath water thing. I had never heard that before, but and this is a weird one, and I don't remember where I heard it, but years and years and years ago, maybe even a couple of decades ago, I heard somewhere that to protect yourself from magics, you could save your, and I'm not sure if it was specific, just fingernails or just toenail clippings, but you take your fingernail and or nail clippings and you bury them in the backyard ward off magic. Is that true, or is that just a wise tale?
Well, it's not so much that will protect you from magic, but it will stop people from using them in magic against you. So this comes from usually from the South and in more rural areas where people were worried about hoodoo and people putting roots on each other. And so you have a lot of stories like this. When people would cut hair, they would make sure to bury it so that a bird didn't take it and use it in a nest, which would cause headaches, they believed. You'd bury your nails and hair so that another sorcerer couldn't get it and use it to cast spells on you. You might put a dime in your shoe to protect you from walking across powders that were laid for you or something like that.
Is that from when I was a kid, I had the penny loafers, the dime loafers. I would put dimes in my penny loafers in a little slit in the leather. Is that where that comes from?
It probably is. You know, I've never actually looked to see if there was the magical reason for the coin in the loafers, but I also had penny loafers that I put a penny in. And so the, you know, the dime, has a, the stories would be that the dime would turn black if black magic was done against you. And what would happen essentially is that a silver dime, when exposed to sulfur, which is often used in powders for cursing, will actually turn silver black. So,
well, hey, Jason, another thing I wanted to ask you about was, my dad was a Baptist preacher, so I grew up in that situation here in the Bible Belt, and I kind of like run from it all the time, but it seems like it's always yipping at my heels when you try to get rid of those Christian roots. They seem to always try to come back up on you. But I love American Indian spirituality, shamanism. I've studied that for since my early 20s and have had a lot of different people on about it. But one thing that I've been into lately that I want to ask you about now is I found out that I was 86% Great Britain, and it brought up the Viking conquest situation, the pillage. And, of course, I got into that Viking show, so I've been reading a lot of Norse stuff, and there's some really good Norse shamanism books, too. We have a few guests coming on about that. But I'm kind of curious, do you use that system, and what's your perspective on that? I'd just love to hear you talk about Norse stuff.
I have no training in it, and I have no... In the Native American or in the Viking? I wasn't following.
Oh, I was just asking about Norse.
In Norse mythology. I have a good amount of my ancestry is Germanic and Danish. And so I have some exposure to working with the runes, but in general, not a ton. It's not my area of expertise. It's not it's nothing that I would expound upon.
Okay. Let me see. You've done financial sorcery and creative visualization. Is that's a function that's in that you use in magic as well? I know shamanism uses it a lot, and like, you know, the whole prosperity self-help situation, but is that a big component in spellcrafting, is a vision and visually, you know, imagining it over and over?
Not visualization is important in some types of magic, but it's more functioning for the magic itself. So maybe you are visualizing a god or a goddess in order to establish a connection with them. Maybe you're visualizing pentagrams to direct energy that you're putting out there. And yes, you can be visualizing your outcome, but it's not similar to The Secret, where the whole thing is essentially just about visualizing what you want to come to pass. That would be different.
Gotcha. Well, this is kind of off the cuff, and I wrote it down earlier. You know, Gollum, like the old silent movie where they make the creature, I forget what else they call it. But, you know, I know I've seen some stuff like that in some kind of magic books, but is that something you're familiar with where someone makes like a Gollum-like creature either energetically or, you know, weirdly like in that old black and white silent movie? Is that something that some magicians do or dark magicians? I know it's a little off the cuff, but for some reason I was thinking about it earlier.
So, you know, the Gollum, you know, very famously made by a rabbi in Czechoslovakia to protect the Jewish community. And it you know, I mean, it's an important, it's a being of clay and mud that was animated through the use of Kabbalah, and then stories of the golem fed into the story of Mary Shelley's story of Frankenstein. But it's, you know, it's there are not a lot of clay automatons running around. Probably the closest thing to making a golem that you find in modern magic is the creation of artificial spirits or artificial elementals, where the magician extrudes energy and will to create a spirit that does his or her bidding.
Okay. Definitely. I know I've come across some of that stuff in something a long time ago, but I don't remember what it was or if I even still have it at all. Let me see. Go ahead, Jay. Jay, still here? You might have got dropped.
Hello, Jay?
I think he's been abducted. let me check and see where he went. So I'm sure he's going to let me know on Facebook for sure. Let me see. I'm trying to get to my Facebook because I'm trying to get to Joe and let him know. I know what I wanted to ask you. When you first started off on your path, what brought you to this path? Like for me, it was a freaking, you know, cancer kind of woke me up. Well, it did. Life and death. I'm just kind of curious, how did your path start? And was it something tragic or was it just an awakening of senses? I mean, what happened to get you started on such a unique path like this? Definitely strange compared to most people, which I appreciate that, of course.
Well, like I said, I had this experience when I was a young man, 5 years old, or young boy, 5 years old. And it always gave me this sense that...
Hi, we're on the other line right now. Please leave a message and we'll call you back as soon as we're done. Thank you.
Hello?
Okay, hey, yeah, I'm still here. I guess someone tried to call Jay and then that's what happened. So.
Okay. All right. So, so there was... there was this spiritual experience that left me with a sense that there was something beyond the veil that we normally consider of consensual reality. And this stuck with me. And so when I got into my early teens, I started asking about religion and church and such, and then moved on from there.
Definitely. What do you think about from a magician's standpoint of Mercury retrograde? Is that a time that you do spells or avoid them? What is your view on that just started? I know that just started today, the 22nd. I have a big interest in the trickster, like the coyote stories and Loki. Like I've always, so when Mercury retrograde, I call it coyote walking backwards. But I'm just kind of curious, is that a time you avoid spell work or is it a time to do spell work?
It is the time to do some rituals that help insulate you from negative astrological influences. So there are various rituals that can help manage astrological influence, and that if you're worried about Mercury retrograde, that is a great time to do them.
And what about the trickster element? Do magicians, is that considered like chaos magic? Do magicians go about trying to use that sort of energy, or would that be, is that considered chaos magic? It's the same kind of energy, trickster energy?
No, chaos magic is more like magic based on chaos theory, like mathematics. So it's a lack of firm ideals, firm hypostasis, and I guess that you would focus on in magic. But the trickster spirit, sure, people call upon trickster spirits in magic, Loki and so on. Some people embody the trickster spirit. And unfortunately, some people use that as an excuse to basically act like jerks. But, you know, it's a path for some people. But that, too, is not up my alley.
Definitely. And you said a lot of your belief system revolves around Buddhism and what else?
I have a background in Tibetan Buddhism and Himalayan magic. I have an interest in Catholic magic and mysticism, both folk magic and ceremonial magic. And I have an interest in Greco-Roman paganism and just a general interest in magic as well that doesn't necessarily revolve on any particular religion.
Jerry's phone died, so he's gone, but we got till 55, and that's the end of the show, so it'll be that 55 minutes, that'll be the end, but apparently his battery died and his phone croaked, so bye, Jay. He's gone. So one of the things I'm dealing with is, like, I talked about writing a book for like 15 years, and then I started doing those written examiner interviews, and next thing you know, 5 years passed, and I had enough of those. I had like 5 books. So it was like when I was telling everybody I was going to write a book, I didn't even know I was writing a book when I was writing a book. So now I'm trying to write a book on my own, not written interviews. It's just me, and I've had a lot of discipline issues, but I'm finally doing it. But it's definitely like you can serious resistance. It's like there's a force that doesn't want me to do it. Maybe it's just me and a laziness. But I mean, I do a job where I put up articles all day, so I'm always messing around with the written word or, you know, titles and everything. So, I mean, you know, I have to fit it into doing my normal job plus that. But I'm just kind of curious, what was your first book, and did you go through any hurdles or obstacles when you first started out? Is it something you talked about, I'm going to write a book, and then you finally did it years later, or did you just sit down and next thing you know, boom, what happened? What was the path for that?
Well, you know, it's funny. I had been writing articles for years here and there, and I wrote an article not attacking, but defending magic and spellcraft against a pagan author named Carl McColeman, who's now a Catholic author because he converted back to Catholicism. And he's a great writer on Catholic mysticism, so I have no problem with him in general. I think he's one of my favorite writers on Catholic mysticism. But when it came to spells and magic, he was not too hip to it. And so I wrote an article kind of criticizing his approach and defending the place of spell work within witchcraft and paganism overall. And it attracted the attention of his publisher, New Page. And so they asked if I wanted to write a book. And we both, you know, in talking with them, we both agreed that a book on protection would be an ideal topic that wasn't covered very well at that time. Anything decent written on it was written 80 or plus years ago, and so was seriously out of date. When I write a book, I try to look for things that need to be written, not things that are already popular. So if I'm writing a book, it's because I think something needs to be said and that I'm qualified to say it, not just that it's time to write a book. So and once it got rolling, then no, there were no issues other than the normal discipline issues where thankfully getting a advance ahead of time kind of keeps you to the schedule, right?
Definitely the deadline. For sure. Well, I'm doing it. I'm finally writing it, but I'm wanting to do a young adults kind of, you know, children's book situation. I get a lot of those kind of books from publishers, and they seem so easy to write, but they probably won't be once you sit down and really do it. I don't know, but some of them I'm like, man, that's good, but it just seems so simplistic. So I'm going to try to do that for sure. That's probably what I need to do first. But yeah, I'm playing around with one character. So some young adults, I have a bear that's like Elvis, and then there's, I'm going to call him Bearless. Hopefully that doesn't exist. I need to Google that and make sure it doesn't. And then I have a character called Chubby Nosferatu, which is like a Chubby Nosferatu villain kind of situation. And then the alien Cletus, and we'll throw him in there somehow.
Wow.
So I got the imagination. I'm sure you can see Cletus, right, on video. There's Cletus, alien Cletus.
There he is.
Some company gave me that a long time ago. It's like a $500 concrete statue, and I promoted them and stuff. It was a long time ago. What about Intention? I know when I first came across Intention was like Carlos Castaneda and stuff. And those books were some of the first ones I came across. And I know he's a controversial character. I've interviewed Amy Wallace, Irvin Wallace's daughter. She has a book called Sorcerer's Apprentice. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but she claims she was like in the Carlos Castaneda cult. And there's like a crazy abusive stuff. But it's a pretty wild book called Sorcerer's Apprentice. But that's where I first came across, you know, the Intention and all that line, because he used it a lot. But from your perspective, could you go into an Intention and how what's the best way to use that when you use Intention?
Well, you know, Intention is important in magic. Many people place too much importance on it as if it's all that really matters, but it's not. But your intention for magic is what guides your actions. It's what focuses the spell, you know? So it is absolutely something that you need to think clearly about what you really want. What is it that is really going to move you forward in life, and how might this come to pass? So, for instance, if I have the intention to make $10,000 this month in addition to my normal income, as a business owner, I can do that easier than if I have a job with a regular paycheck, that, you know, and if I, or a salary job. If I had an hourly job, then maybe it might get me a heck of a lot of overtime. But if, as a business owner, all that needs to happen is it creates more customers. So the intention can be sharp, but conditions need to be, need to be there to make it easy, or why would we need magic? But they do need to be there to make it somewhat possible.
Definitely. So I guess with the state of the world today in America, I've noticed it's become, you know, very negative as far as the administration and everything. And I've noticed like my mom's kept up with it since this happened, and I'm like, I worry that, you know, like, tolls on her health. It's just gotten so nuts. So I have to keep up with it for work, and it's what are some ways to protect yourself from some of the stuff going on right now? And if you were Gandalf the Wizard and Sauron just set up camp energetically, what do you think is going on right now in our world in America with everything? What is your perception on all of that?
Oh man. You know what? I'm gonna
Pass.
I'm gonna take a pass. I'm not gonna dive into the politics right now. Suffice to say, I'm liberal leaning, but I have students that are conservative leaning, and I have students that are hyper left leaning. I don't have any students that are hyper right leaning that I know of. And if I did, then I'm sure they're keeping it to themselves. But I'm fairly moderate politically, but I'm no fan of the current administration. I can tell you that, you know, I would like to see a different administration in there, but I'm not going to get deeply involved into, you know, the politics. What I can say is, to stay sane, before you even worry about magic, people really need to worry about their information, because right now there is, you know, there's this concept called the Overton window, where it's what the nation finds acceptable to talk about at any given point in time. And so people worry about the Overton window moving left or right. And people on the right think it has moved too far to the left, and people on the left think it has moved too far to the right. What I think right now is that there is no Overton window. The Overton window has broken. There are two of them. Because we're no longer arguing from a set of facts that we agree on and just expressing differences of opinion as to what to do based on those facts. We're arguing with different sets of facts. We've got different media than the other people have. We have different fundamental ideas of what the facts on the ground are, that are being told to us. What scientific reports to believe and not to believe. So the first thing to do is to round out your media intake and to make sure that you are getting a heavy dose of media from sources that you may not agree with, but you may even think of it just that your opposition listens to this, and so you should listen to it as well. But you want to have a well-rounded media feed, and you want to realize that while it's important to stay informed, that can be done in a very short amount of time every day. So unless you have a job in politics or policy or lobbying, there's really only so much time that you should spend on it a day. Because the arguing on Facebook doesn't do anything for anybody.
Definitely. Well, what are some ways to, like, it just seems energetically, like, so much weirder than what was happening. So, I mean, glyphs and symbols are one way that you protect yourself from some of that energy if you're involved in it. Like, I have to put up a lot of articles about it and stuff, and some of them make me nuts. So that's something that I was thinking about with the glyphs and stuff. You know, something to, you know, boost up the positivity. I guess it'd be similar to what we discussed with the title of the show and everything. But one thing, we got about 5 minutes. Seals of Solomon, what is that considered, like Enochian magic? Is that something that you can pull symbols from? That's in a lot of Star Wars, Seals of Solomon. There's books filled with symbols of that too, right?
Sure. The Keys of Solomon are filled with angelic seals, pentacles related to the planets, as well as the Lesser Key of Solomon, which has a lot of demonic seals and spirits that are associated with each of those. So they can be used in spell work. They can be used in meditation, I suppose, all manner of things.
definitely fascinating. Jay's got one question, and then we'll close out. What are some entities for health, wealth, and love that you would recommend? I know you said you mentioned Jupiter earlier, but what are some other ones that he could maybe look up and look into?
Oh, sure. You know, health, wealth, and love. Well, you know, let's go Buddhist for a moment. So Menla, or Tibet, or Medicine Buddha for health, and Dzambala, who is this wonderful, big, corpulent Buddha who holds a flag and a mongoose that vomits gems. And so he would be cover you for wealth. Love, there's no one like Kurukula, the goddess of sort of sex and bondage, yeah, and witchcraft and in the Buddhist world. And so those would be three entities that you could call upon there. From the pagan calendar, let's talk planetary deities. So, you know, really simply, Helios, the god of the sun for health, Venus as the goddess of love, and of course Jupiter, the god of wealth. And Mercury can also help with all of those, get some movement on all of those fronts. Speaking in terms of Christianity, Raphael, wonderful for health. Saint Catigen for the unemployed, Saint Homabonus for people that are looking to acquire more wealth. You know, wonderful saints for that. And then love, that, you know, I you can call upon Saint Sarah, Sarah La Kali, the Black Sarah. And there are all sorts of spells associated with love and Mary Magdalene as well. So, you know, there are all manner of entities. And then similarly, there are demons in the Ars Goetia that can handle all of those.
All right. Well, Jason, we appreciate it so much. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Really loved it. What is your website again for everybody?
So people can find me at strategicsorcery.net.
We appreciate it so much. Keep us in the loop. For some reason, when I see you on cam, I think of the game Shadowrun, like a Shadowrun wizard / hacker. You know that game Shadowrun with the elves and all that stuff, and there's magic. It's pretty cool. It's kind of like Dungeons & Dragons, but it's called Shadowrun. That was that movie. The movie that was just on Netflix was kind of like that. It was Will Smith. I forget what.
Yeah, it was Bright or something. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
It's pretty good. It got rough reviews, but it's one of those that you're like, wait, I kind of like this. It's kind of a throwback to the 80s. So they're going to be making more. It got a lot of viewers. But I appreciate it so much, man. Very grateful for you being on the show. Thanks so much. Take care.
Thanks for having me.
All right. All right, everybody, you're listening to United Public Radio, 107.7 FM.
Rock on, Trump.
What?
Go Trump.
Oh, goodness. Coming to the next section. All right, we done? Off the air.
I heard you had a crush on Stormy Daniels.
Stormy Daniels is like Joan of Arc. She's about to slay that ass. God bless Stormy Daniels. I love Stormy Daniels. She's about to, she's like Joan of Arc coming down, about to get that evil bastard.
Oh, Lord, it's craziness. It's crazy.
I can't understand people that look at this administration and think it's not doing anything wrong.
When you pair Bonnie veggies and herbs with Miracle-Gro soil and plant food at the Home Depot, you'll get more than a great edible garden. Right now, you'll also get a great guarantee. If your plants don't produce a harvest by the end of the season, bring them back with your receipt for a full refund. You can't pick better vegetables than that. Grow a garden guaranteed with Bonnie Plants and Miracle-Gro Soil and Plant Food. Only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. For full refund details, please visit homedepot.com/return_policy.